Good afternoon, Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting from the Capitol, behind our enemy lines, I guess. Can we say that? I don't know. Occupied territory. Brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story in the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. This is the 300th episode. 300 for Patriot Radio. Got a very special guest today as well, and going to get to her in a second. I want to talk about, I always bring up scripture at the beginning of the show. Our hope is not in man, it's in Jesus Christ. We can't end in prayer, we must also move to action. Luke 17, 20 through 21, now having been questioned by the Pharisees as to when the kingdom of God was coming, he answered them and said, the kingdom of God is not coming with signs to be observed, nor will they say, look, here it is, or there it is, for behold, the kingdom of God is inside you, or in some translations, in your midst. And if we really believe that, no matter what is happening around us, we will be solidly grounded in advancing the kingdom of Jesus Christ. Just like the Articles of Confederation of the United Colonies said, whereas we all came into these parts with one and the same aim, to expand the kingdom of Jesus Christ. One of the very first compacts in the colonies. And that was the expressed aim. They all agreed on it. And we have no less of a mission today as Christians. We just don't. Now, there are a lot of things that are going to be coming up. I want to talk about a couple things happening in Olympia. We just got done with cutoff for policy bills last Friday. This Friday coming up is the fiscal cutoff. After that, we're going to be on the floor voting. So bills typically haven't made it out of committee. They're dead for this year. Now, when a bill is introduced in Washington State, it stays alive for 2 years, technically. So you don't have to reintroduce a bill next year. But I will tell you that all of the tax bills that have been kind of lying in wait, sugar tax, carbon tax, income tax, all this stuff they want to do, all that now is going to come to the fore. And that's where we really need to be paying attention. Also, bills can suddenly pop back alive like a zombie and be used in negotiations as leverage to gain votes enough to pass the budget. So even though a bill might technically be dead, it truly never is. It's a weird thing. It's probably why they filmed Z Nation on the Capitol steps 1 year. And for real, they did. You can actually go watch that. And actually, I think some legislators participated, not yours truly. And I definitely don't think that John Jacob Schmidt participated as well, because that would be awkward, I think. He's not a zombie. He really isn't. He's one of the best radio hosts out there with Radio Free Readout. All right. I want to play really quick an advertisement we got for an event coming up. And if you have the opportunity, make it over.
Hello, folks. Shelby Gallagher here, wanting to let you know about a great event coming up, the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo. It's on Saturday, March 30th at the Baymont Inn and Suites in Bremerton, Washington.
It's going to be great. This is Glenn Tate here. We're going to have John Jacob Schmidt speaking, Representative Matt Shea, simulcast on 1400 AM KITZ Radio. Look for us on Facebook, Puget Sound Preparedness Expo 2019. Come on out and see us.
All right. If you guys can make it there. Even if you're not on this side of the state, take the opportunity to drive over the pass. It's been pretty good, at least as of late. It's not so bad as it was here about 3 weeks ago with all the snow. Come on over. It's a little bit warmer, and you can meet all of us and talk truly about preparedness and about some of the issues that are happening in our state right now and some of the craziness. Well, it is my great honor to introduce my guest today, and that is Chris Ann Hall. A constitutional expert, a firebrand. I don't know what else to add to that, but just somebody who really loves the Lord and knows the Constitution inside and out and the whole history of liberty going back over 1,000 years. Chris Ann, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Oh, Matt, you are such a dear friend of ours. It is always my pleasure. It feels like we've been too long since we've spoken together. That's the only thing I have to say.
Well, it has been too long, but I just... For the 300th episode, I could think of no one better to be on here, especially with everything happening in Washington State. All these kind of issues that we've been talking about over the years, now we're seeing them play out actually on the ground here in Washington, especially over this right to bear arms, and sheriff saying, you know what, we're not going to comply with an unconstitutional law. If you could give your view of this, and then we'll get into some of the comments that have been made by so-called experts about this whole situation. But what do you think about this? What is the basis for what the sheriffs are doing? And is what they're doing right?
What they're doing is absolutely right. And it's the foundational principles of who we are, Matt. We forget, I think, because we're so negligent in teaching our foundational documents, that the American people become ignorant of the principles that drove those documents. For example, the Declaration of Independence says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. And then it continues and says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And that Declaration of Independence was the document that announced to the world the creation of the governments that we call states on July 2nd, 1776. And so the document that announced to the world the creation of our states establishes that the only purpose for the creation of our states and the people we elect to operate within the government of those states, their only purpose is to secure the rights of the individual citizens. And these foundational documents refer to those rights as inherent rights. Samuel Adams wrote in 1772, among the natural rights of the colonists are these: first, life; secondly, liberty; third, property; together, number four, with the right to protect and defend them in the best manner possible. And the most basic of natural rights, as Samuel Adams would point out in this essay, is the right to self-preservation, to which the right of the natural right to secure property is connected. You're not secure in your life if you cannot also personally secure that life and that property upon which your life is dependent. If a person is in danger of loss of life, liberty, or property, and doesn't have the personal right, along with the individual ability to secure the essential rights, then the person is dependent upon someone else, as someone else's desire to protect them, which reduces every person to that of an indentured or tributary slave who's simply indebted in life to those who are tasked with its security.
Now, we're going to talk about peonage later and on a totally separate issue, right? But let's talk a little bit about the map. So we have I-1639. We have the initiative up here in Washington State. The people voted on I-1639, predominantly the counties on the western side of the state around downtown Seattle voted in favor of this. And if you go by county, you see the map by county that voted against 1639, and you compare it with the counties where the sheriffs are saying, no, we're not going to enforce it, and it's almost identical. And people are saying, but wait, the sheriffs can't do that because the people of the state voted for this. They have to enforce this law. How do you respond to this? Because you hear this argument,
yeah,
that from attorneys general to you know, down to local attorneys. So go ahead.
So what did Benjamin Franklin tell the lady when she said, what kind of government did you give us? Did you give us a monarchy? He said, no, we gave you a republic if you can keep it. I really believe that the errant understanding of what is lawful and what is not lawful, that these attorneys general and the governors and the sheriffs that are enforcing this law, who simply say, you know, it was the will of the majority, I think that stems really from the decline in the teaching that America is a republic and not a democracy. Because what they refer to is a pure democracy. Our founders said that that's not what they created. The will of majority is contrary to the rule of law. Majority rule is always and has always been synonymous with tyranny of the majority and not with the security of rights. So we have forgotten what the rule of law means. And it's been understood throughout history to mean a standard to limit the overreach of government and to curb lawlessness. It does not mean the authority of government to rule over the people. So I hear that all the time. Professors say, well, you know, it's the rule of law. It's the rule of law. Well, no, you idiot. The rule of law is a standard to limit government. It's not synonymous with government ruling over people. And so the so-called will of majority cannot be synonymous with the rule of law, because if that were the case, then those who our founders use this term all the time, disposed to usurp the rights of the people, they only have to control the will of the majority, either through manipulations, coercions, fear, brute force. And it's because of this truth of the tyranny of the majority that every government in these United States, by our Constitution, is required to exist as a republic, not a pure democracy. Every law to be created through equal representation and is to be governed by and limited to the ultimate purpose of all government, which, remember, is to secure the rights of the individuals. And so when any form of government operates contrary to these foundations of a republic and the security of the rights of the individual, the government has exceeded its proper function, acting in direct opposition to its own purpose. The law has been used, as Frederick Bastiat so well put, has been used to destroy its own objective, and it's been applied to annihilating the justice that it was supposed to maintain, to limiting and destroying the rights its purpose was to protect. So you can't say that because the majority voted for it, you have to support it, because I think maybe we forget in our history that slavery was a majority rule, right? Slavery was a majority rule. Caste systems are based on majority rule. Every act of tyranny in America has been facilitated by majority rule.
I think that's exactly the right point, that was the big difference that the founding fathers clearly debated on, the idea of democracy, or that the majority could vote away the rights of the minority, and versus in a republic where that cannot happen by not only the structural protections, but also the oath of office that people take. Explain to this interplay of the oath of office that these not just sheriffs, but state representatives, attorneys general, governors, everybody takes to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state that they're in.
Right. Well, I don't think people, you know, we don't pay attention to words anymore. We don't pay attention to oaths. And I think what we lose is that there's actually a specific order in which the promise is made. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support, number one, the Constitution of the United States. Number two, the Constitution of the state. Number three, the laws of the state. Because we know from Article 6, Clause 2, that the Constitution of the United States is the supreme law of the land. And if we are following the Constitution of the United States, then the states are not allowing the federal government to trample the rights of the people. Remember, the whole purpose of government is to secure the rights of the people. So if we're enforcing the Constitution of the United States, then the federal government is not trampling on the rights of the people. Secondly, if we're enforcing the Constitution of the state, you can't have a will of the majority that's going to undermine the personal rights of the minority individual. And then lastly, they take an oath to support the law. Now, what that means is, if the state constitution is contrary to the Constitution of the United States, we know that portion is not enforceable. But in the same respect, if the laws of a state are contrary to the Constitution of the state or contrary to the Constitution of the United States, then they are not enforceable either. James Wilson said, "It is the Constitution that predominates, and any act created by Congress contrary to the Constitution has no force of law." And that's specifically back to what we were talking about here, Matt. That's specifically what our sheriffs in Washington State are saying. I took this oath. And both the Constitution of the United States and the state Constitution of the state of Washington protect the individual rights of the people. This law that you've created. Now, I'll tell you at this point, Matt, it doesn't matter if it's a ballot initiative passed by 60% or a legislative act passed by the representative. If the law is contrary to the rights of the people, then it is to have no force of law at all. So when we have these attorneys general, the governor, and all these other people saying that the sheriffs are refusing to follow the law, what they're missing is it's actually the sheriffs who are enforcing the law because the law has violated its principles.
Joining us also right now is John Jacob Schmidt, host of Radio Free Readout. And I know he's got a couple questions. I want to do a little bit of a transition, too. You wrote an open letter, actually, to the sheriffs of Washington State. If you could tell the listeners a little bit about that. And then, JJ, please chime in.
Actually, I wrote it to every legislator, every governor, every attorney general in the United States that has ratified these laws denying the right to keep and bear arms to law-abiding citizens. And so at chrisannhall.com in our article section, it's an open letter to governors, attorneys general, the legislators of these United States, and the people, along with their sheriffs and peace officers. So basically what it is a treatise. It's a treatise on the proper role of government and the inherent rights of the people and the duty that our oath takers have to secure the rights against all those who would violate the people's rights, whether that be a criminal or of an overreaching government or law.
Hey, Chris Ann, John Jacob here. How you
hey.
Doing?
I didn't know you were going to be here. I didn't either.
I wanted to let you know that I actually read a portion of that open letter that you put out a couple of weeks ago on Radio Free Redoubt. And
thank you.
Absolutely.
Well, don't we have a legislator friend who read it on the House floor?
Yes. It's going viral, and it's really encouraging.
Is it really?
Well, yes, and that's what. But see, that's what they need to hear. They need some ammo. I mean, a lot of the sheriffs. They know in their gut, this is not right, and it's unconstitutional. And then they really are essentially threatened by the Attorney General of Washington State. They're getting massive pressure from the media. And, you know, it's normal to start to second guess yourself. I mean, you know it's right, but you want something solid to stand on. And I think that letter that you produced gave them so much ammunition and affirmation.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was really
affirmation. Praise God. That was the whole purpose, John. I mean, seriously, I am so encouraged to know that. I didn't know it was reaching as far as it was. I had, prayed that it would, and the purpose that I wrote it was to encourage and empower those who are doing the right thing. But I'm so excited to hear that it's actually being heard.
Yes, absolutely. I wanted to present something to you, though. Something that's been weighing on my mind. I know where I stand on it, but I think the listeners really need to hear. You're an attorney. The Constitution up one side and down the other. This is what it's encouraging that we have so many sheriffs that are standing on, drawing the line and making the right decision. They're also being backed up by many of their county commissioners who are drafting resolutions to back them. Mm-hmm. But we do have a fair number of sheriffs who are saying, you know what, we need to just hold off and wait. We need to continue to enforce it because it is the law. And then we need to wait until the courts rule. And then we will see what they have to say. And if they rule it unconstitutional, then we won't enforce it anymore. But here's what I wanted to present to you or ask if you could clarify for the listeners. We have what they call a series of checks and balances with our executive, legislative, and judicial branch. There's a check. But it seems like somehow it's gotten into our psyche that the only check and balance is the courts. and where, and actually this is beautifully how it's supposed to be, where the sheriffs are also the check and balance on the legislature or the courts. I mean, it works both ways.
It is a very frustrating thing to me. I know where it started. It actually started in 1833. This will be familiar to Matt, but and to lawyers specifically. But prior to 1833, our law schools, our colleges, our students were taught the mechanisms, the workings of the Constitution from a manual, another treatise written by a man who was part of the Continental Congress, who was part of the advisors to writing the Constitution. His name is St. George Tucker. And so from the time that the Constitution was ratified up into the year 1833, everybody learned how the Constitution was supposed to work through this treatise written by St. George Tucker. Then through a series of events where the states began exercising the external check and balance on a federal government that was continually trying to exercise more power than delegated through the Constitution, whoever's in charge, people have their different theories about cabals and, whatever. They changed. In 1833, our schools stopped teaching the treatise written by St. George Tucker and went to teaching the Constitution from a book by Joseph Story. Now, Joseph Story was a judge, and from the book that he wrote on the Constitution forward, we began teaching a degraded view of the sovereignty of the states. We started teaching that the people created the Constitution and not the states. We started teaching not only a federal supremacy, but more specifically a judicial supremacy that is contrary to everything that our Constitution was based upon. And you're absolutely right. The sheriff and the people through their county commissioners, through their state legislators, there are multiple checks on government power that are available to an educated and informed people. And I think the sheriffs need to realize specifically, I totally admire the police chiefs that are saying no. I mean, that's actually, for me, a more courageous thing than the sheriffs, because the sheriffs are not hirelings of the state. They're not hirelings of the county. They're actually constitutionally established, elected representatives of the people who have they are the power in the county. There's no legal power greater in the county than the sheriff. And that's something that we have lost sight of. And so I just want to ask this question, because I'm a bit of a Socratic teacher. The courts, we operate on a three-branch of government system, on the federal and on the state level, right?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So our three branches are legislative, executive, and?
Judicial.
Judicial. So we have just admitted that we have a government built of three branches, legislative, executive, and judicial. So we have just admitted that the judiciary is part of the government. What kind of imbecilic creation of government would we have if the only check and balance to governmental authority is an internal check and balance where they check and balance themselves? I mean, the judges and the courts are created by the state. The judges are appointed by the government. They are paid by the government. They hold their offices by the government. And we should not be surprised when the judiciary sides with who pays the piper. And so our founders were not so stupid. And remember, our states were created 13 years before our federal government was created. So the creators of our states were not stupid. They did not create a three-headed oligarchy. They created a constitutional republic on the state and federal levels. And so for these people to run around as if the courts, which are part of the government, are the ultimate authority on the power of the government, that is the ultimate submission of a subject to an oligarchy. And that's simply not who we are. And I'd like to remind these people who put their faith in the judiciary that these would be the same judiciaries that the same branch of government that at least on the federal level said that men were, that the Constitution declared men property, which the Constitution did not declare men property, but the judiciary declared that the Constitution declared men property in the Dred Scott case. The same judiciary who said that it was constitutional to round up American citizens and hold them in internment camps simply because they have a heritage, a birth heritage that is undesirable in the current events. The same judiciary on the federal level who declared that eminent domain can be the power of the government to seize private property can be exercised on behalf of a corporation, not the government, whose only gain is going to be $1. And so we are not slaves to this body who is becoming increasingly more and more political by the day. We are independent and we have representatives. We have a duty to protect us for when even the third branch of government tries to steal our rights.
They really are trying to kind of implement this idea from Plato of black-robed philosopher kings, right, that they know better. And people fall into it, and it's easy for legislators to fall into it and say, oh, well, we'll just let the courts sort it out because then they don't have any political baggage they have to worry about, right? There's this kind of enshrined laziness by just relying on the court as well.
You know, Matt, it's not laziness. It's immorality.
Yep.
Good. Laziness is my 12-year-old when he doesn't want to pick his socks up off the floor. That's not what our legislators do is not lazy. What our legislators do is immoral because they know the right thing and they're only doing what they do to shirk their responsibility and hide from accountability. And that's what's happened. You know, Adam said that our Constitution is for a religious and moral people alone. It is wholly unsuited for any other. He said the power that our Constitution delegates to to the people in government, if we don't have a moral people, he says those people will tear through the Constitution like a whale through a net. That's the analogy that he used. And so we're left in a situation now where forming society has no benefit anymore. Because the whole reason we form a society is not so that we can overpower and plunder the weak. We form a society so that we can come together as a weak individual in a strength to secure each other's rights. It's built on the most noble and highest moral cause to love your neighbor as yourself. And that means that you protect your neighbor as you would protect yourself.
So recently there was a professor from Weber State, Robert Wadman. This is in a National Public Radio article, who essentially was challenging this idea in regards to the sheriff standing up, right? And it's always these professors who really try to back up the court. They always want to defer to the court. They always want to say that's the end-all, be-all. How do you address Robert Wadman's comments on this whole situation here in Washington State?
Well, you know, there's the professor Jared Goldstein from Roger Williams University. He made the statement that the sheriffs who are refusing to enforce the law is a movement that came out of the Ku Klux Klan. Now, you know, John Jay, you told me, I'm sorry, John Jay, he was actually a very important person, but that's not you, John Jacob.
Right. The other John Jay.
You know
Jay.
Who John Jay was, right?
Yeah.
I get founders flying through my head and you never know what's going to come out. But I'm glad to hear that the letter that I've written is going around because that will give people, like you said, ammunition. And what I did when I read this attorney's quote in this NPR article called "When Sheriffs Won't Enforce the Law," and he tries to make the correlation that the sheriffs in Washington are like the sheriffs in the Ku Klux Klan, you know, I can't even make the correlation that he makes anyway.
Yeah.
But he says, I wrote a letter and I tried to explain. I said, you allude to the claim that you represent a higher moral ground when suggesting sheriffs must simply enforce the laws put before them. And this is what we really, really need to drive this home to our sheriffs. When you're just enforcing the law, that is not a higher moral ground. It's a tyranny that has been denied throughout the ages. I hate to be the one that brings this up, but I want to remind people like this lawyer and the Attorney General of Washington, and I know your governor, they got together in this little, like, grade school blood brothers pact and said, we're going to join together against these sheriffs. The defense of I was simply enforcing the law was the same common defense that was offered at Nuremberg, okay?
Right.
And if just enforcing the law is all that we have to do, and that didn't hold up in Nuremberg, then why does it work in Washington State? A sheriff who is mindful of defending rights instead of enforcing laws, a sheriff like that would have refused to arrest Americans in the cafes of Birmingham and would have escorted Rosa Parks home in any seat she wanted to sit on the bus.
Well, I think that that's a point. I want JJ to jump in here really quick. But in the same NPR article, this is Robert Wadman talking. He says, quote, for me, questions of this nature should be answered by the courts, not the court of public opinion, end quote. And that sounds very enlightened. However, I-1639 was the court of public opinion that he's now asking these sheriffs
to ignore.
To enforce. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right. They're delusional.
I would simply say, Matt, that it doesn't matter because the courts are a court of public opinion as well. And that's what they've devolved to, and
right.
That's precisely why they were never created to be the oligarchy that rules over the people. Remember, it's the courts that actually upheld, at least on the state and local level, the black and white segregation laws and the idea that slavery was a legal institution. If we had had sheriffs that would have operated on a rights basis rather than a legal basis, we could have had a completely different history in civil rights.
Totally different. And in fact, this is a great segue into another bill that was introduced here in Washington State. Senate Bill 5693 from Senator Saldana, which would require our farmers to report their slaves. I go ahead and respond to that. I don't even know what else to say.
You know, I'm just unusually speechless. I can you tell me, Matt, when did Washington State legalize slavery?
We haven't, to my knowledge, anywhere.
Well, actually, the way that they're pushing
what happens when you report your slaves? What does that mean?
What if you report them? Then they become documented workers, and then now we really got ourselves.
No, but what I'm asking is, when you report the slaves, does that mean they're going to be taxed as, you know, with property taxes like they did were in the day of the slavery? You know what I found interesting is the Capitol Press reports that Senate Bill 5693 would require farmers to report any incidents of slavery, peonage, and human trafficking to retailers with more than $200 million in global sales. So if your farm runs under $200 million in global sales, then you don't have to report your slaves, your peonage, or your human trafficking
so
to the
exemption.
Washington government.
Yeah, you're exempted.
So they arbitrarily draw a line on where it's okay to have slaves and where it's not, or you just don't have to document them. Let's get our terminology correct. They're undocumented workers.
Undocumented peons.
which the liberals are pushing to try to bring in through their policies. or creating the environment?
I don't, you know, to me, if this bill passes, it will be the fundamental legalization of slavery. I mean, seriously, because what you're doing now is you're coming out in the open and you're reporting your slaves to the Washington government. And Washington saying, okay, thank you for reporting. But I have more faith. I have more faith in Olympia than that. I have more faith in people. People are smarter than that. I don't know about this Senator Rebecca Saldana, 37th District in Seattle. She's the whip.
Yeah, this is leadership, Kay. This is not rank
she's
and file.
Wait a minute. She's the whip.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to hone in on this a little bit. So you have this is a Democrat bill, okay, that is, again, requiring the reporting of the incidents of slavery peonage, which for the listeners is indentured servitude. In other words, you have to pay off your slave until you pay off what you owe, right. And human trafficking, okay? That's what needs mm-hmm. to be reported. Nowhere in here, though, does it say that if they actually find slaves, they actually mm-hmm. find indentured servants, that they're going to free them. It's just we got to report right. them, right?
Right.
Right.
But only if you make $200 million in global sales.
Exactly.
Ah.
In global sales.
Now, let me
sales.
Ask you something. If you make $200 million in domestic sales, does that also exempt you because it's not global?
Of course.
I you would be exempted as well based by the plain language of the law that's being proposed here, pretended law.
So if once you hit $200 million in sales, you just break off and form two separate companies. So you wouldn't have to
you
report.
You know, here's the problem. She holds a BA in theology and humanities from Seattle University. She's got a worthless degree. I mean, she didn't actually learn anything. So,
And we don't read the Constitution in law school either. So, but yeah, this is one of those bills that people need to hear about. It is literally that crazy over here. My wife hates it when I use literally on the radio, but that's all right.
Literally.
Yeah, it is.
Literally.
Literally.
If you do it with an English accent, it sounds better. Literally crazy.
Literally crazy.
Yeah. No, we just stick with the English accent and tell her, you know, this. She's a nutter. She's loony. I don't even get this.
Right.
Does this thing have – I guess that this thing has co-sponsors, right?
It does. In fact, it's not like – one person either. There's several co-sponsors and they're all from downtown Seattle. Probably they're kind of maybe meeting around that Lenin statue in Fremont, Washington. I don't know if you guys have seen that yet or not, but there's a Lenin statue down there. And we actually introduced a bill to look at moving it, replacing it. But the backlash was essentially leave Lenin
Hands alone. Off Lenin.
Yeah, hands off Lenin, yeah. One of the greatest right. mass murders in history, yeah.
Show us a Civil War statue and we'll tear it down, but hands off Lenin. Interesting.
What do you think about that?
I'll tell you what I think about it. Samuel Adams said, "No people will tamely surrender their liberties nor be easily subdued when knowledge is diffused and virtue is preserved. But on the contrary, when the people become universally ignorant and debauched in their manners, they will sink underneath their own weight without the aid of foreign invaders." And the whole western side of your state is just bonkers.
I think it's the salt water.
They have lost their... They have become universally ignorant. They have no virtue. They're debauched in their manners, and they are sinking under the weight of whatever insanity it would cause you to memorialize Vladimir Lenin. I don't know,
murderer.
But it's not unusual because, you know, my husband and I were both Russian linguists, and we have lots of Russian friends. We aren't, you know, we're not colluders or anything, but. But we have Russian friends, and we have a love of the Russian culture, the Russian history. And the same thing that's happening in America with our young people is happening in Russia. There's a resurgence of worship of Lenin over there. They have totally lost sight of the fact that he is the largest mass murderer in the history of the world so far.
Well, probably. Even in our
well,
own country,
ever,
yeah. Yeah, in our own country, we have kids walking around with Che Guevara T-shirts on. There's a resurgence of Nazism in Germany, And yeah, it's just swings completely all the way to the other side.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
We have stuff called Liberty Gear on the website, chrisanhall.com. And yes, my husband made a T-shirt that says socialism sucks.
Nice. This is going to be one of your best sellers.
Probably is.
And on the back says, want to fight? Because that's what it'd have to say if you're going to wear that, you know, on the west side of the mountains.
Right, right.
I think we need to close the people of Washington in a T-shirt that says socialists suck and have them fill up the Capitol one day.
You know, you just gave us a fantastic idea for the 29th. Yep.
Yeah.
So we're having a big rally here in at the Capitol on the 29th of March.
Oh,
so, yeah. And it's going to be in regards to Liberty State. Mm-hmm. Because
Lexit.
Yeah, the Lexit.
Yep. Liberty State, yep. Exit.
All of these things that are happening, all these issues, it's one more reason why we should split our state. The Founding Fathers left us that tool. Chris Ann, what's your reaction to splitting a state? Dana Loesch with NRA TV said, this is probably not practical. But just as we were talking about earlier, the maps show that the split is already happening ideologically. It's already happening with economics. It's already happening with land ownership and all of these other metrics. Why not have it happen officially?
Staying together is impractical.
I don't, no respect to Dana. I have no idea what that means. It's probably not practical. I mean, government is not practical. Nothing in life is really practical. It just sounds like that sounds like a response when, you know, I don't really want to talk about this subject. Let's move on to the next one. Kentucky was part of Virginia until 1792. Maine was part of Massachusetts until 1820. West Virginia was part of Virginia until 1863. So it's not unheard of that a state would split, and it's totally up to a state to do that. Now, here's the thing. When a state splits off, it's no longer a part of the union. So when you create the state of liberty, then the state of liberty will have to petition to be part of the union, and that's governed by Article 4, Section 3, Clause 1 of the Constitution. That says new states may be admitted by the Congress into this union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state. You're not trying to erect a new state within the state of Washington. What you're saying is Washington is in reality two different states, so that doesn't apply. And it says that any state be formed by the junction of two or more states or parts of a state without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned as well as of the Congress. So you're not trying to do any of those things. So what happens is that you're saying Washington is practically, like you said, by all practicality, it is two states. We are two different ideologies, and that's the thing we have to understand. A state is a community of people who have joined under this, because they have common goals and common ideologies. And so what you're saying is, by, you know, practicality, you are no longer one ideology. You don't believe the same things anymore. So we're actually two states. So that means the state that remains Washington is still in the union, but the state of liberty is not in the union. And so you have to petition Congress to be admitted into the union. Until you are admitted into the union, you are an independent sovereign country like Canada.
Interesting.
Except a lot cooler.
Way cooler.
Except a lot cooler.
Better armed.
Yeah.
Cooler, not in the temperature sense.
Yeah. Right. I mean, seriously, as if you don't join the union, you can create your own money. You can have your own coinage. You can do anything that any independent country can do.
Don't give us ideas now. I mean, we're going to get accused now of trying to declare independence from the United States.
I think the great part about this is it brings up, you know, these other states that you know, where you form Maine out of Massachusetts and West Virginia. They were talking about what does freedom look like in those times, and that's what the conversation has now returned over this entire debate here in Washington. What does freedom actually look like right now?
Right.
You know, you said something very profound, Chris Ann, about you and JC both being a Russian linguist, and that you have Russian friends, and you're very tied in with the Russian culture, and probably, you know, heavily influenced because of becoming linguists. You develop a love for that culture. It's amazing how when you speak the same language, there's something, a bond, a knitting that takes place right down at the soul level with another culture that you share a language with.
Right.
And what's interesting is that in Western Washington and Eastern Washington, we speak two totally different languages.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our, the way we think, the way we speak, the things that are important to us, the what comes out of our mouths are two totally different languages. We both speak English, but we're not even on the same page. And people are drawn. I can't tell you how many times I feel it myself when I head back over to, you know, to the east side where I'm from, and how free it feels. You feel like, oh, I'm among my own people here.
Mm-hmm.
And so it practically, in the practical sense, as you pointed out, it is already two separate states. Indeed.
Let me ask you something, topographically and geographically. Is the Washington part dependent upon any resources from the Liberty part?
Oh, well, I mean, we have the breadbasket of the entire world and the potato producing and
hydroelectric
power, which we supply to 11 states. So in some respects, yes, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. See, we have friends in Northern California that are trying to create the state of Jefferson.
Oh, yes. Our friends.
Because California is just way too big, and they don't even follow their own constitution as far as representation goes. So Californians are really disenfranchised because they only have a fraction of the representatives that their constitution demands that they have. But they are having a really big struggle because the southern part of California is so dependent upon the water that comes from Northern California. So Sacramento is fighting tooth and nail the separation, even though they really don't have a legal stand because Sacramento is in such violation of its own constitution.
Right, right. We are in contact with the state of Jefferson folks, and we correspond with them often. We hope to one day be a neighboring state with them.
Yeah, no. I think that would be really great. I think if you find a point in time where the union is not working, then you have to find a way that you can live together in peace. And sometimes living together in peace means going your separate ways. And it doesn't mean that you don't remain in the larger part of the union, but you can't stay in a relationship with the people, like you said, who speak and live a completely different language.
You articulated some things really well that I haven't quite had put in terms that you did, as far as Liberty State, the whole concept of the process of that, the legalities and the reasons behind it, made it very, very practical. Not that we don't already think it's practical, but it completely turned Dana Loesch's comment right on its head as far as being practical.
Well, you know, and that brings up this interesting discussion. Is it practical to continue to be oppressed in virtually every way possible? We have the worst abortion laws in the country. Now they have a bill that they want to remove all barriers to abortion, make us fund something against our conscience. Mm-hmm. They want to take away religious liberty like they're doing with Baronelle Stutzman. They want to take away our right to bear arms. And they can't do that unless we let them. We all
property
know that.
Property rights.
Right. Property rights, everything. Is it practical to just suffer under that or actually live free? That would be how I would retort to that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It just – what you're dealing, I actually looked up the word practical, okay? And it says of or concerned with the actual doing or use of something rather than the theory or the ideas. I think what you've touched on there, Matt, is the understanding that oppression is not a theory or an idea. It's an actual reality. Lack of representation is not a theory or an idea. It's an actual happening event. And so to say that it's not practical means that it's not actually doing, you know, that just doesn't make any sense to me at all.
I think you're right. I think she just does something she wasn't knowledgeable enough to really address. And it was just easy. It was a way to just move on.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we do that.
Sure.
Because I've been in situations where people ask me questions, but I say, you know what? I don't know anything about that. So let's move on.
Well, Chris,
you know, I don't know if you heard that, but that's a conversation my husband had with me a long time ago. You know, this is year number 9 for us. And so when it stepped out and I started getting more speaking engagements and more media coverage, my husband made me promise that I wouldn't try to answer questions that I didn't know what I was talking about. He said, because something happens when people get a microphone in their hands. All of a sudden, they have to know everything about everything. He said, and then they end up just looking like an idiot. Please, he said, please don't make me married to an idiot. So I promised him a long time ago that I would swallow my pride and be able to say publicly, no, I don't know the answer to that question. Let's move on.
Well, in the last couple of minutes that we have left, Chrisanne, tell listeners a little bit about your podcast and where they can go to find out more about you and more information.
Oh, sure. Well, the Chrisanne Hall Show is nationally syndicated. We are on terrestrial stations. We don't have a show. We don't have a show in Washington. We have some in Oregon. But we are also on internet stations. We are nationally syndicated and globally distributed. And we have been doing this for 6.5 years now. And what I like to tell people is I'm not a talk show. I'm a teach show.
Yep.
So what JC and I do, JC, my husband, started being my co-host about a year ago, which was really nice for me. Because it's nice to not have to sit around and talk to yourself every day. And so what we do is we take the current events that you see in the news and we bring them to you from a constitutional, principled, and historical perspective. Mm-hmm. The way the journalists are supposed to bring them through real, investigative journalism, but simply don't anymore. So we are not fake news. We are fact news. And we try to do that. We do that Monday through Thursday, and then we have a 2-segment show on Saturdays, or on the weekend show. Some people play us on Sunday. And you can find us on iTunes, Google Music Play, Spotify, Jesus Pod. I always think that's cool. I'm on Jesus Pod.
Yeah.
And and on our website, chrisannehall.com. Which is chrisannehall.com. And we also have an online constitutional training program called Liberty First University.
Yes.
Liberty First University. Make sure the first is in there or you won't find it. And what we do is we take the teachings that I do all across the country and even more, we put them in a classroom kind of forum so that people can learn. We have students, you guys, middle school, high school, college students. I even have, don't tell anybody, but I have some college professors that are enrolled because they want to know more about what they don't know.
Outstanding.
That is outstanding. Well, if you could give a quick couple minutes to the young people that are listening to Patriot Radio. You know, a lot of people kind of write off the millennial generation, but I know a lot of them, they're just trying to find the truth.
Yep.
So if you could just kind of address them real quick.
Well, there was one thing that I've learned, and I always tell people, because we go around and we teach, and quite often we're teaching an older crowd, and people are always bad-mouthing the younger crowds. And I started telling them, look, stop bad-mouthing the younger people, because I have never met in my entire life, in all my travels and all of my acquaintances, I've never met a young person who woke up every morning and said, yes, let's go see how many lies I can learn today. Our young people have learned lies because we teach them to them as truth. And so my encouragement to the young people that are listening to this show, you are not alone. We are all over the country. We have done for the last 6 years 260 meetings in over 22 states. There is a counter millennial culture, and what I mean is the popular millennial culture that you see on television, that you see promoted through the media and through the politicians. There is a counterculture to that, and we have a liberty millennial generation that is growing up. So don't be shy. Don't be discouraged. Don't hide. Liberty is a beautiful thing, and it needs to be out in public. And don't be afraid to sow the seeds of critical thinking and logic and liberty in the minds of your friends. Don't be obnoxious, but bring the message in love and be consistent. Don't be political. Be principled, and you will win them over, because I was a raving radical socialist and a recovering liberal. And I think if anybody can see the truth, and if I can see the truth, then anybody can. And it just takes time, it takes patience, and it takes love.
Yep.
Chris Ann Hall, constitutional expert, great friend. And I appreciate all the work that you're doing. Keep up the fight out there. Thanks for joining us on Patriot Radio today.
God bless you guys. We'll see you sometime this year. We're going to be out that way sometime this year teaching.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. JJ, real quick, plug Radio Free Readout.
Yeah, Radio Free Readout every Saturday morning from 9 to 9:30 on KTW, the ACN affiliate out of Spokane. And every Sunday, our podcast airs at 8. It streams at 8 p.m. And right before that is Wall Builders, and right before that is the Chris Ann Hall Show.
Boom, just like that. I love it. 300 episodes. I am so excited. There's going to be 300 more.
Congratulations.
You know, I mean, seriously, 10 years.
That's
good. It's been a long time.
Good job. Yeah, I'm coming up 8 years in this June. Blows me away to even think about that. Chris Ann's been, what, you're going on 7 years.
Yeah.
Going on 7 years. Yeah, 7 years with a radio show, but 9 years traveling and teaching.
That's right. That's right.
We're getting old. Well, everybody out there in Patriot Radio Land, may God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one. Keep up the fight.